Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Live Stream Live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and as usual, we are sponsored by nobody. I am open to sponsorships, and I'd love to be able to do a little spiel about your product or your industry. I would put a little graphic right here in my hand, and we would talk about it. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm doing pretty good. Today's show mug is Wally from the Pixar animated film Wally. He's one of my favorite characters, and he was my wedding cake topper at my wedding because he's the coolest. So what have I watched? I finally watched the last episode of Penguin. Have you all seen Penguin? I really love this show. It's one of the better DC adaptations that I've seen in a very long time, in a very, very long, long time. I mean, Colin Farrell's performance and transformation and all of that stuff is so incredible, just from an acting perspective. I know I spoke about it a bit last week or the week before, but him getting into the prosthetics, Jonah, it was really, really good. Him immersing himself in the world of the prosthetics is truly amazing, and it's very hard to do. It's one of those things where you can lose yourself, you can lose your performance, and it can get kind of hokey or dumb. And his performance is really solid, very, very grounded. I have seen Arcane on Netflix. I have not seen season two yet, but season one was fucking awesome. Really great storytelling. I loved how each little burst of the episodes was a new story. And I also used to heavily play League of Legends. So it was really cool to watch that. If you watched Penguin, what did you think about the last episode? I'm gonna like major spoilers here. I'm not trying to like fuck anybody up, but him killing Vic at the end, while I saw it coming in the moment, I was like, they're not doing that, that's too much. And then they did it, and then I don't know if it was too much. It was kind of perfect, in fact, for his character development and for the world of Gotham. This particular world of Gotham, which is way dark and super gritty, I felt like it was a perfect way to propel him out of this, you know, fantasy world of him wanting to be like Rex, who was the mob guy who like ran his area before, and into this new version of that, because his entire life was a lie. And then him making his prostitute lady friend be his mom at the end just made it even more weird and disturbing. So I really enjoyed it. If you have anything to add about it, I'd love to hear your thoughts, but I just thought it was up and down awesome. We didn't get to see Vic's dead eyes so he could survive. You know what? I agree. And I've seen kind of some of the I guess the conspiracy theories about Vic online, and about how maybe he might be the new Robin, maybe Robert Pattinson's Batman finds him and helps him, or maybe he has some sort of amnesia. It would be an interesting way in, and it wouldn't be the traditional way into Robin where he's in the circus and everyone gets murdered. But his family did all die because they exploded in the city. So, you know, in the flood, right? So in the flood, and then it exploded. So he's got a lot of trauma, and that's what it takes to be a hero in Gotham. Oh, hi, Jan. Thanks for being here on Facebook Live. All right, so we are live on YouTube, Instagram Live, and Facebook Live, and we're live everywhere. It's a fun live show. If you comment, I can see it, and we will talk about it, and we'll talk about what you comment, as long as you don't say something disturbing or overtly sexual. We will talk about whatever you feel. let's see. I am back at the Metropolitan Opera doing another show. It's called Tosca. It's one that I've been in before. And what's cool about that, and what's cool about the Opera House, is that if you've been in a show before, they invite you back again. So I've been in the show multiple times. I am playing Roberti the Torturer in the show. It's a fun little role where you get to beat the shit out of the tenor in the show. And yeah, it's a beautiful opera with amazing singers, and I get to have a fun acting role in it, which is always great. Tonight's guest, her name is Stephanie Streisand. She is a very, very, very old friend of mine. We actually went to college together and acting school. She, from what I understand, went the improv route and then went into writing screenplays of all kinds, but from what I understand is a bit more prolific in animation. One of my shows that I love that she wrote for is The Mighty Ones, and I also got the opportunity to audition for it a bunch of times, which was actually kind of surreal because she wrote a lot of the episodes that I got to audition for, which was very cool. But I'll shut up and I'll get her up here. So without further ado, please help me welcome Stephanie Streisand. Oh, hi, Stephanie.
Oh, hi.
How's it going?
Good. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. So we did, in fact, go to undergrad together on Long Island in New York.
Yes.
And
yeah. No, you go.
No, you say.
Yeah, and we took a couple of acting classes together.
We did.
Yeah, and I think it was very clear that I should be a writer.
No, not abundantly clear. You're good at
the second class. Once we hit the second class, then it was like, oh my God, did you see that girl do that sonnet? That girl's a writer.
That girl's a writer. She's got a face for writing. Oh God. Someone says, hi, Miss Stephanie, you look so gorgeous, which is a great way to start.
Oh, thank you.
Ooh. I think it's name's Jan. There it is. Hey, Jan. Hi. Bye, Jan.
Bye.
So other than, you know, you are a very good actor, and it was great to watch you work in class. And I feel like you have to, not all the time, but it does translate to becoming a very good writer when you understand what it is to also be on the other side. Do you agree or no?
Yes, I agree with that. You can make it broader, and I think it makes you a better actor, or it makes you a better writer if you understand everything to do. Like, if you understand all the fields, like editing, set design, if you understand every single aspect of filmmaking or animation or live acting, like, if the more you understand, the better you are at the specific craft that you're pursuing.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, I didn't really, I'll ask that in a moment. I also, when I started to produce and write my own stuff, it really gave me a better perspective of how everything works. And it calmed me down so much, because it used to be such a point of, like, trauma almost. Like, oh my God, like, I need this, oh my God, why am I not getting it? And most of the time it comes down to trivial bullshit. Like, it comes down to your height or eye color, or they don't like your beard, or your nose is not the right size, or some stupid shit.
Yeah.
Someone asked if you're related to Barbara Streisand.
Yes, I did it. I made it. I did it.
You did it. Nepotism worked. You did it.
I did it. If there's one thing that Babs is known for, it's animation.
She's super in there.
It actually never comes up in my meetings.
It never comes up?
It never comes up. It comes up in the writers' rooms about like maybe 7 weeks in. They'll be like, wait, Streisand, wait, are you related? It's way later that they like put it together. Meanwhile, when doing acting auditions, that was always the first thing asked.
Interesting. So do you find that like writers could give any fucks about who actors are? They just want to write?
No. Writers care who the actors are in their thing, because sometimes a name can mean it gets produced.
Sure.
So we care about that, but I would say nobody cares if you're related to somebody, if you're a writer, unless that person is related to a producer who finances films.
Sure. Yeah. So it's very...
then it matters.
Then it matters. And it's like, hey, can you talk to blah, blah, blah?
She seems to only produce her own shit. So it's not...
It's very specific. Hey, do you know someone who has money that will let us have that money, please?
I'll tell you a story about her. My cousin wanted to be an actress when she was like 6 or 7. And the family was like, oh, well, why don't you call her? And like, why don't you call Babs and like, see like if she could give you advice and da da da. And the conversation was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for you. You're going to love making it on your own.
Oh, I see.
To a 6-year-old. So like, that's where she's at. And that's great. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
used of nepotism sometimes, because it means that somebody thinks I've made it to a point where there could be no other explanation but my last name.
That's true. It does get annoying, I'm sure, though. Like, you know, like you've built quite a pretty cool life for yourself. I've been, you know, watching it through the lens of social media and us sporadically speaking to each other, and also getting to audition for your show. You know, so you started off in New York. Did you get heavily in the improv scene?
Oh yeah.
I love the way you said that, because that's exactly how it feels.
It is how it feels. Improv is super fun. But I think improv is a little like buying a boat. Like, it's really fun to take out for a spin, but you spend a lot of money in a boat that like
doesn't go anywhere
yeah. And maybe like get you money back. It's just like, you know, it's a thing you do for fun. But you meet a lot of really funny, talented people while you do it. So it is good. If you're thinking of industry wise, it's great for networking. It's also great to build certain tools. Improv is great for pitching. Improv is great for acting. Improv is great. So I'm not saying don't do it.
Don't
do it.
It's a gateway drug.
It's a lot of fun. And because of that, it is a little addictive. So just my advice is no one to stop.
I know it is true. And also no one, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say, but like, actually, I don't know how it is anymore, but there was a lot of like predatory shit happening within the improv scene for a long time. And then like that got exposed a bit, and then everything exploded because of COVID, just like everything else, like everything shut down. And I don't know how it's been since it's reopened, but
I honestly, since things have reopened, a lot of a lot of talented people who are really good at improv have realized that they don't necessarily need to go through the specific comedy theaters, and they can make money putting it up independently.
Sure.
They don't need like the name of the theater to help them with their ticket sales. I would say they have more confidence in themselves.
Well, that's good, because we need more of that. We need more like indie shows that it's not in one place, one people or a couple of people making a fuck ton of money off it, and then everyone else just getting scraps.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really happen so much anymore, but they would, like, certain shows and certain films would ask, like, UCB, like, hey, do you have like 20 improv guys that we can see? And then if
and
you
had, no, we have no dudes. No dudes.
Yeah, we have no dudes. There's no dudes. None. Do you have any? Like, yeah, it's weird. It's
far
like,
and wide under our couch and could not find any dudes.
Not in improv, certainly not. Or in stand-up comedy, there's none. There's no dudes.
Hard to find. Really hard to find.
Yeah, that's why they had to go ask them. They're like, hey, do you have any dudes? And then they're like, whoa, we have all the dudes in New York just here in this building. Yeah. Yeah. And then, so I was looking at your IMDb. You were on Worst Cooks in America?
Yes. That's actually the thing that I got through UCB.
Holy shit. I have to go watch your season now. What was that like?
It was interesting. So they wanted someone funny who couldn't cook or who had trouble cooking. And I was like, I'm perfect for that because I'm just not experienced.
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm a bad cook. It's that, I mean, I don't know. I have very little patience, which is bad for cooking.
Sure.
And I just, like, I didn't even know how to hold a knife. Like,
what did you make in the first episode that they had to eat? That, like, they're like always like, this is gross.
They didn't show it on camera because it actually, so I accidentally made, I didn't even mean to, I accidentally made poached eggs.
Oh.
Because I didn't have the patience to do like sunny side up eggs. So I was just rolling the egg in the frying pan and it came out poached. And then it was like raw spinach with salad dressing and some almonds and a little bit of honey. So it looked like something a model would eat.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is what I know how to cook. And the producers came over and said, can you just do us a favor? Can you cut a tomato on the camera, please? Because they knew I didn't hold the knife right.
So, okay. So
they were like,
no,
oh,
dummy, that knife.
You better cut that tomato.
Wow. So when did you get eliminated? Did you make it pretty far?
I got disqualified because while I was in the diary room, they were serving lunch. And so I missed lunch. And I was like, I'm fucking starving. And they were like, well, why don't you just eat one of the contestant dishes? And I was like, that seems dangerous. So I went with that day. The challenge was like half of us did a chicken dish and half of us did a fish dish. So in my head, I'm going, well, the chicken could definitely get me sick. So I'll go with a fish dish. And I got really sick. When you have food poisoning, you can't handle food because it's contagious for like a certain amount of hours.
Okay.
So because of that, I couldn't film for 48 hours. So they were like, you're disqualified.
So you were shooting for the show. You missed lunch. They wouldn't feed you. And then they said, eat some of this bullshit. And then you got sick. And then they fired you.
Yeah.
Dude, that's fucking classic.
Wait, don't book my ticket yet. Because they were shooting in New York. So I was like, book my ticket for next week. And I just spent the week in New York with family and friends and then went back to LA. It was like a nice free trip. I only had to be with some of those contestants were really off. But I only had to spend about a week with them. So it was fun.
All right. I mean, I'm happy that it was fun.
I learned how to cook a little bit from it and hold a knife. So I got a little bit out of it. I don't enjoy cooking, so I'm not really cooking anymore.
Oh, you're not really cooking even now?
Yeah.
Can you make an egg that is honey side up, or do you still roll it?
I haven't tried. I just hard boil them because I can leave them for 11 minutes and then come back. So
I got really into cooking like super a lot, and I'm also like super into baking now. Like I make my own like sourdough bread. I make my own butter, and I like know how to like cook and all that stuff. I don't know. I got really into it. So I learned how to cook from my wife, who's really into cooking. And then she was like, "I'm gonna make bread," and I was like, "I'm gonna try and learn how to make bread." And now I have to make the bread because I'm really good at it, which is kind of funny. But so now I'm trying to do all this other stuff. Like I'm trying to make like we make pancakes. I'm trying to make cinnamon rolls. I'm trying to do all this shit now, and it's become this like other like obsessive compulsion thing for me because it's like bread, specifically sourdough bread. It takes so much time, so you would hate it. You would go fucking crazy. But it takes multiple days. And if you fuck it up, it's fucked up. Like, and it's not good even. So you have to really like care for it and don't touch it too much. Don't fuck with it too much. Don't,
Oh
you know.
no. No.
Yeah. And then, yeah. I
No.
mean, I love it, but it drives me crazy.
I do have a an air fryer,
Oh, sick.
which is really helpful, 'cause I could cook chicken in that. Cooking chicken in a pan is no good for me 'cause I just keep flipping it over and over and over again 'cause I don't have the patience to let it
Yeah, that's fine.
thing.
Yeah, whatever works for you, right? Like you don't have to be a chef.
As long as I
Yeah,
eat, it's fine.
as long as you're eating, that's the most important part. So, okay. So then, you were on Worst Cooks or whatever, which is still very fucking cool. It's cool and also kind of hilarious. Was animation always a path that you thought you would be moving into, or was it an accident, or?
I always say if you had told me when I was a kid that I'd be writing 30-page papers and 90-page papers for the rest of my life, I would have cried. So I loved cartoons growing up. I hated writing growing up. I have oh my God. I have dysgraphia. So
Dysgraphia. Okay.
it, yeah, it so my hand writes slowly, manually. So I always
Oh.
homework hated writing, and it wasn't until there was something that came out called an Alpha Smart where you could type and then hook it up to your computer at home. And it wasn't until then when I was like, oh, now I can fucking take notes. Now I like writing a little bit more.
Because you could type. Yeah. Interesting.
But I was acting right out of high school. I was doing some professional stuff, and then started doing improv while going to college, and found that at the time it was easier for men to get on a team than it was for women to get on a team and be seen and heard. And I found the best way to be seen and heard was to write my own stuff, and I got positive feedback from that, and I liked the control of it, that I had a little more control, and it started getting more and more fun figuring out certain things like kind of math equations I had a lot of fun with. And that's how I got into writing, but I always wrote very silly slapstick. That's just what I gravitate towards due to probably the cartoons I watched growing up. And also, watching Zucker Brothers and Dick Van Dyke on Nick at Night and stuff like that. So I just go to slapstick, which is great for animation. I've written
You're
live
very good at it.
action slapstick, but now gone are the days of Zucker Brothers where they'll spend like thousands of dollars on a 5-second joke. But in
Oh.
animation, you can do that 5-second joke.
Right. Yeah, because it's animated.
Yeah.
I mean, you're ex exceptionally good at writing. I mean the things that I've been able to read that you've written, or while it hasn't been a ton, it's very good and very funny, and it's well written, and I'm so happy to see it. Like it's so cool to see you in this world that you really belong in.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice of you to say. No. If I may return the compliment.
No.
Okay. I forgot. Actors hate compliments.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You can be.
I remember our Shakespearean classes together and how it just seemed, I know you put a ton of work into it, but it seemed effortless when you were performing it. And so to see you, like, so of course it, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of work. There is a lot of work that goes into being a professional actor for sure. But you do so much work that from the outside, your projection does seem effortless because of all the work that you put into your craft.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. That's really cool to hear. And I really appreciate that. That's what you aim for when you're trying to do anything in the arts, right? Is that, you know, like you put so much effort into it and people don't normally see it or care. They just want the end product. Yeah. And thank you. It's cool. I mean, I'm glad that it's a mutual respect and admiration and stuff, just because it's really hard to do this industry. And to stick around in it is can almost seem like endless torture. I mean, especially with this, we just had those stupid strikes that, you know, aren't stupid. We like needed to have them.
Yeah.
But I mean, people still don't really understand why we did it. I mean, you have a very personal story about it. If you're able to like share it. Specifically the one about Look Who's Talking.
Problem child.
Yeah.
All good. All right. Yeah. So one of the things is how streaming is viewed by the people who run the place on purpose versus how everybody sees it. So straight to streaming is viewed as less than everything, even though everyone goes to streaming.
Right.
So film, like if you write a film that's going straight to a streamer, they treat it like it's straight to VHS. So
it's not, it's...
you remember when you were a kid, like some shitty movie that like it's like too shitty to even be a TV movie.
Yeah, like it's like Aladdin 4 goes right to VHS. Yeah.
Right. So that's how they're treating the straight to streaming. So like
Which is total bullshit, because
that Predator prequel that came out, that was treated like a straight to VHS.
Wow.
So because of that, you know, the pay is, even though you're writing a fucking movie, the pay is, obviously it hasn't been really updated because we don't really do straight to VHS anymore. So the pay is pretty not great.
And they don't pay you on time either, I'm sure.
No, but not always. However, they do a better job of paying writers on time, because in the WGA, the contract is if you don't pay on time, you pay with interest.
Yeah, so that's what happens with us too, but they wouldn't accept it in the contract. Like that was one of the things that they wouldn't budge on, is that we were like, let's get actors paid on time or you're gonna have to pay more. And then they said, but we already do pay more. And they go, yeah, but you have to pay more than that. And they were like, we know we don't pay on time and we're not going to. So we're not gonna say yes, and we're just gonna keep paying late fees, but these late
fees,
please move on. And,
yeah.
And I was like, guys, just pay us. It's not hard to just cut a check on time. You're worth $42 billion. Like, you know,
there are one or two positions at the WGA that are kind of like enforcers that call up and go, where's our fucking money?
Yo, give me my fucking writer's money.
Job. They're like, yeah. They're like, hey, nice studio you have here. Where's our fucking money?
Give us some money. I'm going to rip off your legs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to stab you with this ink pen.
A friend of mine just got that job. He was just promoted to that. And I was like, what is it like? He's like, it's pretty crazy how they know that they're in the wrong. And you're like, where's the money? And you just... I love the fact that our union has enforcers.
I just think it's cool that you just get to like there's like a whole ass job where you just get to scream at people, and it's like fine because they're fucking up, and it's like, you're fucking up, give it to us. I don't know why you. Yeah, the shit that they pull to keep folks, I don't know if it's on purpose. I hope it's not on purpose, but it feels like it. It's purposely pulling power away from the people that make them their money. Right. And if you don't get paid, then you can't like do it anymore. You have to go do something else. So I don't really understand why they do that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. They see it as, I think they see it as like, oh, we're giving you money. Like, you're lucky, instead of them realizing that you're the one making them money.
I think they realize it. I think they just want to fuck with you because they can.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation that I have at this point, because just from how long our strikes went, like, they exploded their own industry just to like be like, no strike.
Well, a problem with this industry right now is that the entertainment industry, up until streamers, has always been about advertising. So the better the show, the more expensive the ad space. That's how like everybody on Friends was able to make $1 million per episode, because that ad space was so coveted that they could sell 30 seconds for so much money.
Right.
Advertisers. But with streaming, it's like the CEOs took over and went, oh, you know what I hate about entertainment? Commercials. And then they were like, I don't understand why we don't make money anymore. And so right now it doesn't matter if a show is really good or really bad, because the subscribing fees are what runs it. And there's no ads to sell. Although now we're going to go back into commercials. So hopefully that'll help with spending. But it's made these companies do crazy things, such as famously... Coyote versus Acme was a movie that was made last year.
And
like a preach.
No,
But Coyote versus Acme was made. It had screenings, like test screenings. It was a good, really great, funny movie. And they shelved it and claimed it was a loss, that they had like lost it.
For fucking tax write-off purposes.
Yes. So it cost about $20 million to make. And the loss, they were able to claim $40 million.
Yeah.
So they paid $20 million off of something that never got shown, where I think it was going to go straight to streaming. So it wouldn't have made really any money, because there's no ad space.
The same thing happened with Batgirl. It was the same shit.
Yes, but with Batgirl, they were able to hide it by being like, oh, when we merged, we lost it. As though, like, as the companies merged, the file went missing.
Yeah, we merged, which means that when we merge, the hard drives, they explode and we need new ones.
Only Batgirl went missing.
Only Batgirl. Like this has nothing to do with, you know, the CEO's bonus at the end of the year or anything like that.
But with Coyote versus Acme, there was no merger. So the government was like, wait, what happened? And then kind of just did a don't do that again. But in reality, we as taxpayers paid for the movie.
We did.
So we should get to see the movie since we all paid for it already in our taxes.
I also want to see the movie. Wasn't John Cena in it? Like, that would have been cool.
Yeah, and Will Forte's in it.
Yeah, he's better than John Cena, but like, I like them both.
Yeah, I think Coyote should sue Acme.
I think they should. it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to make a fucking movie or to make a TV show. And when you do that, or like when you like cancel a show for no fucking reason, not because of reasons, but just because of like your reason, you are blowing up hundreds, if not thousands, of people's jobs. And if it's unexpected, there's not, like, especially now, there's nothing to jump onto. Like, what are you going to do? What did you say over here? It's like most people want the product but don't want to pay for it. Yeah, it's true. That is true. And with the mergers and the buyouts and all the stuff now, there's, you know, insecurity in the industry. So right. We were talking about this earlier, how no one's going to greenlight anything until next year.
Yeah. And something that's happened throughout this year is has been a lot of executives getting fired because there are companies that want to sell like the company name and everything. And the less people that they're currently paying, the more they're seen in the green and not in the red. So they've been firing executives, which means also less meetings in general. And maybe you were developing something with an executive and then they're gone the next week. So, yeah, there's a lot of instability right now. And yeah, we're going to find out how it goes next year.
Yeah. There's a thing that I cannot really say anything about yet, but I don't even know what I can say. There's a showrunner. It's a television show who likes me a lot. And we've talked a lot and wants me to be the lead in the thing, but he can't even pitch his thing because his agents don't want to waste it now.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah. We've been calling it shooting blanks. Like, you don't want to shoot a blank right now. Cause a lot of places are, cause right now what's going on in this industry too, is executives who do still have jobs want to meet with writers and hear pitches, even though they can't buy anything. Because it looks good on their calendar to be like, look at all these meetings I'm having.
You can't. Oh, so they don't get fired. Yeah.
So there's a lot of like, this past year has been a lot of, you almost feel like you're in kindergarten with each other playing business meeting.
That's very stupid. like they're not going to have anything again. There's not going to be anything for them to make again for next year. And then it'll be the end of the first quarter, and then all the trade publications are going to be like, why is the industry so stupid and not working? Everyone is so sad and poor. And it's like, well, yeah, because they're doing it to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, like Bob Iger doesn't give a fuck. He's going to retire again and leave with.
I think if Bob Iger's listening, I think he's a really great guy and should consider hiring more female writers that like him a lot. Like, I think he's really great, you know?
I like Bob Iger too. It's, but like,
we both like Bob Iger.
Yeah, I love Bob Iger. I love Disney. I'd love to be in a Marvel or a Star Wars, please.
Yes.
Yes, please. Thank you. But yeah, but it's people that don't have any real skin in the game because they're so wealthy that. And it's not their company, right? They're just running the company. And if there's a board, the board is just trying to harvest money from the company. So they're, you know, like when all of the major studios were owned by the original families, shit was different. I wasn't in the industry then. I've only heard about it. I wasn't even fucking alive yet. But you know, like the executives worked on sets. They worked on shows, they worked on film, so they understood what it took and what it was like to be on them. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah. I compare it to like fuck, what's his name? My brain. Musk.
Oh, Elon.
Thank you. I compare it to Elon Musk, where he like he goes and he buys Twitter and he's like, ugh, you know what, I hate ads. You know what I hate? Like safety rails for whatever. And then it's like, wait, why am I losing so much money?
Why is everyone hating leaving now?
Rich people take over and still have the brain of the consumer instead of the brain of a businessman.
Right. Let's just comment here. So the only two movies that I have even looked interesting to me have been Red One, which doesn't look interesting to me, and Wicked, which does look interesting to me. This person doesn't like to go to the movies except for the popcorn, but those two look like it would be almost worth it. Red, while it seems like it should be okay, has been getting fucking shit on because of the Rock, I guess. Like he's
is that the Santa movie?
Yeah, it's a Santa movie.
Oh, I mean, it looks super fun. I
will say, fun.
To the person who responded, definitely streaming now, I think, is my old ass. It reminded me of like a 70s kind of summer movie. It's a real fun time.
Is that on Amazon? What's that on?
I feel like, let me plug other people's
movies. Yeah, let me look it up. I'm going to look it up. My old ass.
Might be Amazon or Apple.
My old ass. Please don't be porno. All right. It's on Prime. It's on Prime? It looks like it's on Prime.
It's super fun. I recommend it. It's got like a...
Aubrey Plaza.
It has Aubrey Plaza, but it has like a... I know it's not this, but like Breaking Away, about like the kid that rides the bicycle. Have you ever seen that? Daniel Stern.
No, you're not talking about E.T.?
No. Oh, okay. There is a bicycle in that too. It's like it just reminds me of 70s like coming of age story of dudes, but this one stars a woman.
So it's a movie that's written for dudes, but they put ladies in it.
It's definitely it's written for dudes, but it stars a lesbian character. So like, you know, she's like, it's her last summer in the area. So like, first thing she does is like quickly hook up with like the hot chick.
Nice.
It's like, yeah, I'm that fucking chick. Like,
that's awesome.
Kind of.
That was more of like a joke, just because like that's like what conventionally happens first, is like there's like a dude that's like, I'm writing this movie for dudes, and they're like, we don't want any dude movies right now, and it's like, all right, well, I'm changing all the names of the characters to lady names, but they don't change any of the dialogue.
That's funny. I will say when I pitch, if I'm pitching a show that has a female lead or two female leads, I always compare them to male characters. To be
so shitty.
But like, they're like dudes.
Oh, that's weird. Does that work? Does that work?
It does.
Oh, that's so shitty, Steph.
Well, no, I mean, I throw in one female character, but like,
no, I'm not saying that you're shitty. I'm saying that's like, that sucks. I understand that like you have to pitch how you have to pitch, and that you have to be like, it's just like Star Wars, and they're like, oh, okay, but like,
well, I mean, yes, but there's a lot of stories where men are the protagonists, so it's easier to find the comparisons with male characters. But it is also a way to be like, no, it's cool, like dudes will still like it.
Oh, I see, yeah. It's like, It's got ladies, but they fight stuff, so dudes will like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. So you've been doing some cool animation stuff. Is that where you want to stay? Is that where you feel like you belong? Or, you know, what else is kind of on your list?
I love writing slapstick. So I don't care if the medium is live action or animation. As long as it's slapstick.
Okay.
However, that being said, live action pays three times more than the animation.
Right. Right. Which is another thing that, so like the animation contract went up for renegotiations and then kind of came back shitty again, right?
And they're still in negotiations.
Oh, they're still. See, I didn't know that.
They're still in negotiations, but the animation union has a lot of ground that they need to cover to catch up. So I'm not holding my breath. It's going to be a hard road, and it's not the best union for writers, because the people who are paid for the union don't understand what writers.
So it's not the same union as the WGA. It's its own thing.
So Walt Disney, when he was making cartoons, he was saying, "Oh, writing for cartoons is actually different. So we're going to start our own union." And it was his way to underpay the writers.
Oh fuck! All right. And it's
kind of like that today.
Right, because you don't get residuals for animation, right?
You don't get residuals. You get a third of the pay. There's a lot of other things too, those are the big ones for me. And, you know, WGA has been trying really hard to be helpful to writers. You're not allowed to poach from another union. You can be in both unions. I'm in both unions. But they can't poach. However, we recently found out, we were kind of lied to by people who work for our union. They said that you can't make a show that's under the Animation Guild for the writers. You can't flip it to WGA. And we were able to do that with Rick and Morty.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be able to? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they were like, oh, it makes all the animators lose their jobs, which just wasn't true. They just wanted those shows under their belts.
So they could pay. You mean like the Animation Guild wanted it under their
under their bubble, and then the writers worked really hard on Rick and Morty to get it to WGA a couple of seasons in, and they were able to do it no problem.
Great. So do they get residuals from that show?
Yeah, once it turned WGA, any script that was a WGA script, they get residuals for.
That's fantastic, because that show is so wildly popular. Yeah, I mean, like, look at Inside Out 2 made like $11 billion, right? So,
$11 billion, and the minimum for writers for an animated movie is $30,000. That would make
flat.
That would put you on welfare.
Yeah, so that's what you make. That's it.
That's minimum. Like, obviously, you can argue. Like, you can always negotiate to get it higher.
Yeah.
But I know, famously, the writer for Lion King and the writer for Beauty and the Beast was paid only $30,000 for each of those movies, no residuals. And then they made the live action, and they basically just used her lines. I think she was able to make money off of those because they credited her in it. But Lion King made so much money, no residuals. So that's something that needs to be fixed.
They should just merge together or whatever. Like,
because there's so many non-writers in the animation union. It covers all animation.
Oh, so it covers animators too, and like storyboard artists.
Directors and even PAs. Like PAs for animation, even though IATSE has their own local for script supervisors and for writing assistants, they have their own union. But for some reason, they all, like, if you're under animation, you go into the animation union. So they don't even get the benefits that they should be getting. It's IATSE is a strange little beast.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, one of the reasons that I have not really done a lot of live theater in a long time is because I ran heavily into TV and film because of how much it pays. It's an unfortunate practicality of being an adult. I don't know how else to say that, but yeah, you have to be able to pay your rent and eat and shit like that, or you're not going to be able to pursue anything that you want to.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I write plenty of my own stuff that I want to get made, that I like try to pitch to folks and get money for, and you know, that's my like passion stuff that I want to do. But I'm aware that, you know, like Law and Order like murder show is gonna pay my mortgage, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like special burn victim unit's gonna pay for.
Oh, my friend's been in that recently.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was so excited. He played just a burn. Totally, you couldn't even tell it was him, and it was 3 days, and it really helped pay the rent, and he just had a baby recently, so it was like really, really helpful.
No, that's so super helpful, and that's great. Like being a burn guy and getting paid as a principal artist for 3 days is a big deal.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I was a potato a couple weeks ago. Like
what was that for?
For a commercial for Pluto TV. So,
like, were you on a couch? You were like a couch potato?
Yeah, I was a couch potato.
That's awesome. I was a banana. One of my first things was I was a HIV prevention banana that had a condom put on me. And I had this whole conversation about another banana, about how cool it was. And then he thought that he was getting picked up to have a condom put on him, and then he got eaten on camera. So he didn't even get to experience having a condom put on his face. So yeah, it was very funny, but also like kind of dark, you know. But yeah. I can look back at it on a laugh now, but you know, like at the time, I was, because they CGI'd my face onto an actual banana. So I had to, they shoved my head through cut out like foam board, and they painted my face yellow, but they didn't let my ears go through. So I couldn't hear anything or anyone. Like I couldn't hear my scene partner, and I couldn't hear the director. So we had to scream all of our lines so that we could be heard. And if you watch it, I have it. I'll post it tomorrow or whatever. We are very obviously yelling at each other, but
we're great.
Yeah. It's real stupid. It's real stupid, but it's fun. Are you working on anything now, or is there anything fun or exciting happening?
The most recent job I had was I was doing a story breaking on Bluey, which was really, I know. And at the time when I heard about the job, my agent was like, oh, the people at Bluey are interested. And I was like, I don't write preschool. And he was like, have you watched the show? And I said, no. He's like, watch the show, and then if you don't want to be submitted, like you don't have to have the meeting, blah blah blah. Like, and I watched a couple of episodes. I watched the first two episodes, and then I looked up like best episodes to watch, like fan. Yeah. So I watched three of those, and I went, this is not for kids.
So literally, I have, my daughter is 3 years old. We have watched so much Bluey, and me and my wife cry through the entire thing. It is so good and incredible. And we
think that they're watching, though, because like, for instance, the Rug Island episode, I'm like, what do the kids think that they're watching?
They're watching a funny episode about kids playing an island game on a rug. And like, that's,
I was sitting at home alone watching that episode, and at the very end I stood up and went, give him an Emmy.
It's, we've watched every episode of that show like 100 times, and it's one of the only shows like that I've seen ever that I can do that with. And we've watched some kid stuff that I'm like, I don't know if I can watch this again. Yeah. If I do, I'll saw my head off. But Bluey, so you were story breaking for Bluey?
Yeah, and the hours were 4 p.m. to midnight. It was remote because they...
Oh, because they're in Australia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So
Which ones did you work on?
It's for season 4.
Oh, there is going to be a season 4.
I don't know. Wait, was that not...
I don't know. We don't know.
I have no idea.
Did you sign an NDA or anything? All right. So then I don't have to like immediately end this live. But we weren't sure. We like hadn't heard anything about it. Like I'm gonna go upstairs when we're done, and I'm gonna tell my wife, and she's gonna freak the fuck out. But that's cool. So like you don't have to tell me anything about the actual episodes. But for people who don't know, what does that mean, story breaking for a show?
So story breaking is like they know that they have another a show knows that it's going to have another season, and they're like, oh, we'd love to hear ideas of what we could write about. Like, we're not running on empty, but like I mean, it can happen even in season 2, just having writers in a room just spitballing like what the new season could be about. And it's also treated a little bit like a paid audition as well, if they are hiring writers, looking for staff writers, which Bluey's not. Bluey's mostly, it's just written, the episodes are written by Joe. So yeah. So this was like, oh, we just want to hear some ideas, some spitballs, and like, you're paid for those 3 days. And you just are like, all right. You're paid pretty well, and then if they choose to be like, oh, I like this pitch, like I'm gonna do that, like that's what you were paid for, to be like, here's a pitch, like you're strong. Okay,
interesting. Yeah.
But they have rules on their show, so they send you a Bible for their show, they send you like what elements that have to be in every episode. So like, for instance, a game has to be in every episode.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Cool. Well, because that's a huge part of the show, is that the parents play with their kids. So,
yeah. That's cool. And it's also a game that just the kids play, and things like it's just a game has to be in the show that helps discover a certain lesson that, without like hitting you on the head with the lesson that's learned from it.
Oh, that's great. That's really cool. I mean, also like, Joe has really, like, him controlling every aspect of that show has made him not only a ton of money, but like it's really, you don't see anything like that anymore. You don't see like a one person controls every aspect of their creation.
It's very out of the US, because in the UK that's how it's done too, usually, is they hire the one to write the entire series. Off the top of my head, like Man Down, which is written by Greg Davies, that's all Greg Davies. Fleabag is all her.
Yeah.
You get it.
No, I mean, I just think that's a much better model.
Yes and no, because if you have a very strong vision of what the show is and like where you want to go and where it ends, yes. However, like having a couple of other brains to bounce off of is great, which is, you know, why Joe had a story breaking room, is to bounce some ideas off a couple of brains and be like, okay, because he writes like an average of 52 episodes a season. So,
oh, shit. All right.
Like, so this new season, it's going to be around the same amount. So it's like, I don't think he was running on empty, but like he needed a couple of people to talk to.
No, it makes sense. I mean, like when you have a show like Bluey also that is so, popular, and the like actors in the show are also going on like Jimmy Kimmel, you know, like when is the last time you saw like an animated show have their actors go on?
Right.
You also don't want it to like fucking suck. So
yeah. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, especially with so many, I feel like it's crazy. It's the most watched show across all streaming platforms and not covered by WGA. It's non-union. It's completely non-union.
That's so wild.
Yeah.
That's probably not great.
No, yeah, I'm sure everybody's not paid well. As it should be. But hopefully, hopefully they make money. Some of them make money off the merchandising, but I would assume that the art aspect, the artists are not maybe paid as great as they should be, considering it's such an amazing show.
Hmm. I would agree. Because it's non-union. But I also don't know how things work in Australia either. I don't know.
It is under the Australian Union, so I should take it back. But Australia works interestingly because everything's under one union. So there's no like actors union, writers union, under just one union in Australia. So it's hard for them to negotiate for things because they're representing everything.
Oh, so they just are always like in constant fights about everything all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see how that can be both good and bad. Because like, it's like, well, then nobody was working on anything.
Yeah.
Like it just so happened that we aligned for the first time in like, what, like 30 years or something where we were able to kind of like work with each other to be like, no, like we're going to try and make this happen, and we still kind of made it out of it with not so fun. I mean, you guys got like a really clear AI clause, and we got like here's some money for the AI people that they're gonna make of your skin, and we're like, all right, great.
We were lucky in that when the contract was first made in the early 1900s, we had a definition of what a writer is. And it says a writer is a person who blah, blah, blah. And we were like, a writer is a person. So we were like, fine, you want to make your scripts with AI? That's fine. You're still going to be paying a person like $1 million for that script.
Right. Or not,
like $100,000 for that script, whatever the minimum is, because a writer is a person.
Right.
So good luck. And they were like, oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Because it's not cost effective.
Yeah.
And that's what SAG-AFTRA was trying to do too. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's no definition for actor with the word person in it.
No. No, it's very frustrating. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's a big scary question mark coming.
Did you have memorizing Shakespearean lines?
In the beginning of everything, just like everything else, it was memorization was the hardest thing that I did. And it's like that with like a lot of people, I guess, but it's also like the least amount of work that you do, because you can't do anything else, as you know, as you took acting classes, without the memorization part done. Now it's like, it just goes into my brain when I look at the page.
It was really hard to get in my brain, and I would cheat by making melodies for.
Well, it's poetry. So that makes sense. It's basically a song. It's not a bad way to do it. It's just, if you get caught in the melody and you speak it that way, then it can get kind of weird. Like if like you're singing like,
like make you punch certain words over others where maybe it shouldn't be punched hard, but you in your head memorized it as a higher note.
Sure. I actually was I got better and better at memorization. And then when I was on The Tick, I had to get so good at it because our scripts changed literally up until we were walking to set.
Whoa.
So, and this happened for the whole time. So we would get mail, like the amount of like emails we would get, like, it's the blue pages, it's the yellow pages, it's the aqua pages, it's the turquoise pages. Like, we never got to goldenrod, you know. So, and for those of you that don't know what that means, so each script revision or script change is they're a different color so that no one gets confused. And normally the last version is goldenrod. It just happened that way, and it's kind of ridiculous. I actually have a shirt that says it just says goldenrod on it.
That must read a little differently.
It does. But we would have to memorize our lines walking to set for the first rehearsal, which was fucking crazy. And sometimes we'd get like 4, 5, 6 pages, and we just have to literally be like, and then we do like blocking with the pages in our hand, like, okay, and then like our like standards would come in, and then we'd all run back to our trailers, and we'd sit in one person's trailer and just like hammer the lines for 45 minutes and then go shoot. And then you had like 2 or 3 takes, and then you had to move on. But now I can look at a page or two of shit and just it's there. It's in my head.
Do you remember who wrote the episode that has the joke, he lost Tuesday, as like a concept? It's such a good joke.
It's such a good line. So Ben Edlin wrote most of the episodes, but there were other really amazing writers on the show. I'm going to look it up because I know like Ben wrote a lot of my shit that I said.
Yeah.
Which is really cool and like was a amazing experience for me because he's like one of my heroes.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to look it up quickly on IMDb Pro while also holding a full conversation.
I'll think of a topic. So at the beginning you were talking about the last episode of The Penguin.
Oh yeah. Talking about The Penguin.
I loved it. I think Vic had to die, because if we're going into another Batman movie, it would be weird for Penguin to have a dude following him around being like, you're perfect, you're amazing, I'd do anything for you, Penguin. had to go. But
oh shit.
Piercy is there yet. If we didn't see the dead in his eyes, which means that he could come back. I mean, his name is Vic, like, let him come back as Victor Zsasz.
Oh, wow. That would be cool. So I thought that the, whatever his name was, I don't remember his name because I thought he was going to be a Scarecrow.
Oh, Doctor.
Yeah, like I thought he was going to be Scarecrow, and then he wasn't Scarecrow.
Yeah, he still might be, because somebody found an Easter egg that in his office, the Scarecrow mask and one of the hands are in the room.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
So I don't know. I thought he was going to be Hugo Strange. But I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, they were talking about that new drug. Yeah, I thought he was going to be Scarecrow by the end of it, using the new drug.
So we got, so I found it. So Ben Edlin certainly was a writer. So was Kit Boss. And then story editors also were Francesca Gales, Adam Starks, Mark Ganick, and Joanna Stokes.
Oh.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool people working on this show. It was like a Like I got to meet a lot of people that wrote for things that I watched, but that's how it goes, right? Like everybody is working and either they've been working forever or they're just now allowed to. Yeah.
Hanging out and trying to keep it cool. Yeah. It's
what I did. I internally was freaking the fuck out the entire time. And then I didn't say anything, but at the end of season one, I was like, I've watched you since I was, you know, I was like 11. And like at the premiere party, I got like a little too drunk at the premiere party. And I like walk up to Ben Edlin and I was like, listen, man, like I've been like everything. And like, I just mean so much to me. Like, please don't think I'm weird. If you're going to bring me back for season two, like I'm just, you're great. And like, he was like, yeah, thanks, man. Don't worry about it. Like, it's okay. And I was like, yeah, oh God, you just said it's okay. I have to go. But like, I came back. So it didn't fuck it up too much.
It's hard not to fan out. I was once at a karaoke bar and ran into one person that I knew or something, and somebody was like, oh, what do you do? Are you like an actor? And I was like, no, I write. And they were like, what do you write? And I go, animation. And all of them were like, we work in animation. And I was like, really? Because animation's a small world. Everybody kind of knows everybody.
Yeah.
And one of them was like, yeah, I'm Adam Henry. And I was like, oh my God, you're Adam Henry? You're She-Ra. Like, you were the art director of She-Ra. And then I just like freaked out. And that that's the worst I've ever been. Oh, I've been bad with, I don't know if Gray Griffin goes by a different name now, but, you know, she famously played Azula as well as like every other voice actor. And, for Mighty Ones, they wanted to know for like, there was like a female character that I created and they were like, do you have somebody in mind like for stunt casting or whatever? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And they're like, yeah, you know, because if you don't, like, well, we can always ask Gray to do it. And I was like, Gray Griffin? And they're like, yeah. I was like, just get Gray Griffin. I love Gray Griffin so much. Like, get her. And they were like, oh, I mean, but we could get, and I was like, get Gray Griffin. To me, that's stunt.
Give it to me.
Oh, my God. Can I meet her? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, oh, my God.
That's awesome. So having auditioned for your show, how does that work? Like, is it mostly offers and they're just hearing people just in case, or?
Such a weird character in that specific instance that they were like, we could pitch a stunt casting for this specific
specific thing. Okay.
But other than that, it was open casting.
Well, that's good to know, you know, because I kept going in, which felt really cool.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, that didn't happen, which felt very sad.
Dragons, I wrote on Dragons Nine Realms, and a lot of the parents were stunt casting, like Julia Stiles was one of the parents and things like that. But there's a wonderful sketch written by John Mulaney for the Sack Bunch Lunch, or whatever that show was called. Where there's like a test screening with kids for a cartoon, and one of the kids, they're like, what'd you think? And they're like, I recognize the voice of blah, blah, blah. Was the person playing this character this famous actor who's 70 years old? And they're like, yes, it was. As though like kids give a shit who like about
who's playing. Yeah, who's playing it.
So, yeah, nobody was watching Dragons going like, oh my God, is that Julia Stiles?
Holy shit. Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, kids don't give a fuck. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, like my 3-year-old has no idea that Maui is The Rock. I know that it's The Rock, right. But she's just like, it's that guy who has a hook and I like him.
Yeah, it's like, and that's the wonderful thing about animation is really all you got to do is be a good actor, I think. Like everybody in animation on my side is like, we don't care as long as like it's acted really well. And it's the CEOs that are like, but we want to we want to hang out with a celebrity for lunch.
That's always the way. That's always what it's like. We've been talking for over an hour. So if anyone has any questions that they'd like to ask or any comments that are, you know, not about the way that we look, that would be fantastic. But we are going to wrap this up soon because this conversation felt like 5 minutes. This was so much fun.
It was fun.
I really appreciate you saying yes when I asked you to come hang out with me.
I know when you asked.
Yeah, this is cool. I mean, you've always been just a really cool person, and I've always liked you. So I'm so happy that you're doing great.
Ditto.
All right. Looks like no one has any more questions or comments. I'm gonna let you go, and I will talk to you very, very soon. And okay. I'll do my ending spiely bit now. And goodbye.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Anytime. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you had a great time and you had a wonderful time, as much of a wonderful time as I did talking to Steph. Really cool info about animation and just how the industry works in general. Oh, goodness. Have either of you taken on a project you regretted? I certainly have. Stephanie's gone. But I've taken on a few smaller indie films that I regretted because they they weren't good. they were either like very poorly acted, very poorly written, or they were new, or they didn't have good cameras. And I, you know, it was in the beginning of my career when I desperately needed to have real footage, and it didn't work out for me. So I didn't get it, or it was so bad or poorly shot that I couldn't use it. So that's the only thing that you really regret, is like not being able to use it, or not being paid for a thing that you were supposed to get paid for. Makes you feel like you made a mistake. Again, thank you so much for coming to the live stream live. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're watching on Instagram, thanks so much for being here. I have a subscription that costs less than a cup of coffee a month. It's $5 a month, and you get access to a bunch of things that I've created. Amazing community of people that all hang out with each other on this app called Discord. It's a messaging app where you can talk or chat or stream or whatever, and it's a fun, nerdy, magical time of like-minded folks that all like to talk about stuff. You'll get behind the scenes pictures, exclusive merch, discounts, and things of that nature. It's great that you stutter and you're an actor. I stutter. It's true. I have a stutter and I am an actor. It has been a challenge for a long time. I don't really do it when I'm acting. I'm talking to you live, and it's just who I am as a person, and it's not rehearsed. I haven't worked on the character because the character is me, and I'm just trying to be as real as possible. So I like the fact that you like that I stutter, and I like the fact that you like that I'm a stuttering actor. But yeah, it's cool. Thank you. For a long time, I was told that was a bad thing and that I should leave the industry. Not recently, but in the beginning. It's brave. It's very brave. I don't know if it's brave. I mean, I understand why you're saying that, but I never wanted to do anything else. I had to do this, literally. Like, it's just it's a compulsion and a thing that I feel like I need to do. So, and I get great joy from it, and I'm fairly good at it. And other people seem to enjoy watching me do it. So while I appreciate it, I don't think I'm brave. I think I'm just living my truth. And if anyone else has a speech impediment or anything that they've been told they're not allowed to do something, just go fucking do it. They don't know a goddamn thing. I'm on TV. They don't know anything. If I can have a stutter and I can work on myself and I can do stuff like that and be on television, then you can do anything, anything at all. And that's, and thank you for coming to my TED talk. Yeah, no, it's not a PC glitch. I stutter sometimes, but it's okay. And that's it. So again, I have a subscription. There is a link in my profile on Instagram, and there's links on both the YouTube page and on the Facebook Live. So thanks again for coming. I love you for being here, and I'll see you next time on the live stream live. Goodbye, everybody. Beep, beep, beep.